A surprising number of people showed up all at once to rescue us, Eddie told Verna. I do not recall seeing the Creator among them.
The warm breeze ruffled Verna's curly hair.
I suppose not, but you know what I mean.
The crickets in the woods kept up their steady chirping. Life seemed to be a little sweeter, their situation a little less hopeless. She let out a sigh. I hope the Creator will at least help Zed and Rika take back the keep.
Zed will not need the Creator's help, Eddie said. Another man showed up to help get us out. Chase be an old friend of Zed, me, and Richard. Chase will have those holding the key praying for the protection of the Creator. Then we can look forward to the day the keep is back in our hands and Jagang is denied help in breaking through the passes into Dahara.
Verna waved her arm, signaling, and the four couples standing at the back of the wagon shuffled forward with their children.
Welcome to Dahara, Verna told them. You will be safe here.
Thank you for helping get us out, one of the men said with a bow of his head to Addie. I feel ashamed now of the terrible things I had been thinking of you.
Addie smiled to herself as she tightened her thin fingers on his shoulder.
True, but I could not blame you.
The girl who had brought the message the last time tugged on Verna's dress.
This is my mother and father. I told them how nice you were to me before.
Verna squatted down and hugged the girl.
Welcome back, child. Welcome back.
Chapter 55. Whenever a breath of wind sighed among the branches above, silvery streamers of moonlight cascading down through the forest canopy glided about in the darkness like ghosts on the prowl. Kaylin peered around, barely able to make out the somber shapes of the looming trees as she tried to see if there was anything that did not belong. She heard no chirps of bugs, no small animals scurrying among the leaf litter, no mockingbirds singing throughout the night, as there had been. Carefully picking her way over the mossy ground, she did her best to see in the gloom so as not to step in holes and cracks in the rocky places or pools of standing water in the low areas. Ahead of her, Richard slipped through the open forest like a shadow. At times he seemed to disappear, causing her to fear that he might no longer be with them. He had ordered everyone following behind him not to talk and to walk as quietly as possible, but none of them could move through the woods as silently as he did. For some reason, Richard was as tense as his bowstring. He felt that something was wrong, but he didn't know what. While it might seem a beautiful moonlit night in the woods, the way Richard was acting, on top of the haunting silence, had draped a pall of foreboding over everyone. Kaylin was at least pleased that the skies had cleared. The rains of recent days had made travel not just difficult, but miserable. While it hadn't really been cold, the wet made it feel so. Taking shelter had not been an option. Until they had the final dose of the antidote, they had no choice but to press on. The antidote from Northwick had improved Richard's condition a little, in addition to stopping the advance of the symptoms of his poisoning, but now the temporary improvement was dissipating. Kaylin was so worried for him that she had no appetite. They now had well over double the number of men with them, and many more than that were making their way toward the city of Houghton by different routes. Those other groups of men planned to eliminate the lesser detachments of Imperial Order soldiers stationed in villages along the way. Richard, Kaylin, and their smaller group were pushing toward Houghton as rapidly as possible, deliberately avoiding contact with the enemy, so as to get there before Nicholas and his soldiers knew they were on their way. Stealth would afford them the best chance of recovering the final dose of the antidote. Once they had the antidote, then they could gather with the rest of the men for an attack. Kaylin knew that if they could first eliminate Nicholas, it would make it much easier and less risky to defeat the remaining Imperial Order troops. If she could somehow find a way to get close to Nicholas, she could touch him with her power. She knew better than to suggest such an idea to Richard. He would never go along with it. To a certain extent, Kaylin felt responsible for what these people had suffered under the Imperial Order. After all, if not for her freeing the chimes, the boundary protecting Bandekar would still be in place. Yet, if these people could rid themselves of the Imperial Order,
The changes that had come about also meant the true freedom they had never really enjoyed, and with it, the opportunity for better lives. The change in the people in Northwick had been heartening to witness. That night, the men Richard and Kalen had brought had stayed up most of the night talking to the people there, explaining the things Richard and Kalen had explained to them. The morning after the annihilation of the soldiers who had taken over their city and held them in the grip of fear, the people had celebrated by singing and dancing in the streets. Those people had learned not only just how precious freedom really was, but also that their old ways provided no real tools for improving the quality of their lives. After Richard had dissolved the ancient illusions of the wise one's wisdom and the meaningless tenets the speakers substituted for knowledge, and after the killing of the enemy soldiers, the men of Northwick had not been shy about volunteering to help rid their land of the Imperial Order. Freed from the enforced blindness of a repressive mindset, many now hungered aloud for a future of their own making. Kalen unexpectedly came up against Richard's outstretched arm. She put a hand to her chest, over her galloping heart, then immediately turned and passed the signal to stop back to those behind. There was still no sound in the dark woods, not so much as the buzz of a mosquito. Richard slipped his pack off his back, set it on a low rock, and started quietly searching through it. Kalen leaned close to whisper, "What are you doing?" "Fire. We need light. Pass the word back for some of the men to get out torches." While Richard pulled out a steel and flint, Kalen whispered instructions to Kara, who in turn passed them back. In short order, several men tiptoed forward with torches. The men gathered in close, squatting down beside a low jumble of rock next to Richard. He picked a stick up off the ground and dipped it in a small container from his pack. He then wiped the stick across the top of a high point on the rock. "I'm putting some pine resin on this rock," he told the men. "Hold your torches over it so that when I strike a spark and the resin flames up, it will light the torches." Pine resin, painstakingly collected from rotting trees, was valuable for starting fires in the rain. A spark would ignite it even when wet. It burned hot enough to often be able to catch damp wood on fire. Richard had always seemed at home in the dark. Kalen had never seen him need to have light like this. She stared intently out into the night, wondering what it was he thought might be out there that they couldn't see. "Kara," Richard whispered, "pass the word back. I want everyone to get out a weapon, now." Without hesitation, Kara turned to pass on the orders. After a seemingly endless span of silence, broken only by the soft whisper of steel sliding past leather, word came back, and she leaned down toward Richard. "Done." Richard looked up at Kalen and Jensen. "Both of you as well." Kalen drew her sword, Jensen her silver-handled dagger with the ornate letter R that stood for the House of Rawl. Richard struck the spark. The pine pitch flamed up with an angry hiss. The torches caught, light ignited in the heart of the dark forest. In the sudden harsh glare, everyone turned and looked about to see what might be hiding in the darkness around them. Men gasped. In the trees all around them, perched on branches everywhere, sat black-tipped races. Hundreds of them, beady black eyes, watched the people. In that moment of sudden bright light, everything but the flickering flame was silent and still. With a burst of wild cries, the races launched their attack. From all around, all at once, the races descended on them. The night air suddenly filled with a riot of glossy black feathers, the sweep of huge wings, hooked beaks, and reaching talons. After such a long silence, the sound of piercing cries and beating wings was deafening. Everywhere, the people met the attack with fierce determination. Some of the men were knocked to the ground, or stumbled and fell. Others cried out as they tried to protect themselves with one arm while driving off the attack with the other. Men hacked at the races atop their friends and turned to ward off other screeching beasts that flew in toward them. Kalen saw the red-striped breast of a race abruptly appear right before her face. She swung her sword, lopping off a wing, spun around, bringing the sword up to hit another bird coming in from the other side. She stabbed a race on the ground at her feet as it reached in with its beak, like a vulture, to try to rip flesh from her leg. Richard's sword was a blur of silver slashing through the winged attackers. A cloud of black feathers surrounded him. The birds were attacking everyone, but the assault appeared to be centered around Richard. It almost seemed as if the races were trying to drive the people back from Richard so that more of the birds could get at him. Jensen frantically stabbed at birds going for him. Kalen swung at others, knocking them to the ground, wounded or dead. With measured efficiency, Kara snatched them out of the air and swiftly wrung their necks. Everywhere, men stabbed, cut, and hacked at the onslaught of fierce raptors. Some men used their torches as weapons. The night was filled with the screams of the birds, with the flapping of wings, with the thud of weapons striking home. Birds tumbled and fell as they were hit. More dove in to take their place. The trees all around poured the monstrous birds down on them. Wounded and dying birds struggling on the ground made the forest floor a writhing sea of black feathers. The ferocity of the attack was frightening. And then, it was suddenly over. A few of the birds on the ground, wings spread, still tried to get up, their feathers making a silken rasp as they rubbed against the feathers of dead birds beneath them. Here and there, men stabbed or chopped at a bird still alive on the ground at their feet. It wasn't long before all the creatures finally went still. No more races came from the sky. Dead races mounded up against Richard, like snow drifted in a storm. Men panted as they held torches aloft. They peered into the darkness beyond the light, looking for any sign of more trouble from above. But for the hissing of the torches, the night was silent. The branches of the trees all around appeared to be empty. Kalen could see scratches and cuts on Richard's arms and hands. She waded through the sea of dead birds to get to his pack sitting on a nearby rock. The forest floor around him was nearly knee-deep with dead races. She had to flip a dead bird off Richard's pack. Pushing her hand down into his pack, she blindly searched until her fingers found a folded waxed paper that contained a salve. Kara rushed in close to Richard when she saw him unsteady on his feet. She grasped his arm, lending him support.
"What in the world was that all about?" Jensen asked, panting, still catching her breath, as she pulled strands of red ringlets off her sweaty face.
"I guess they finally decided to try to get us," Owen said.
Jensen patted Betty's head when the goat stepped, unhurt, through the corpses of races to get in closer to her friends.
"One thing for sure is that they finally found us again."
"There was an important difference this time," Richard said. "They weren't following us. They were here, waiting for us." Everyone stared at him.
"What do you mean?"
Kalen paused at daubing salve on his cuts.
"They've followed us before. They must have seen us."
Betty moved in closer, leaning against Kalen's leg to stand and watch her and Richard talking. Kalen wasn't in the mood to be scratching the goat's ears, so pushed her out of the way. Richard laid a hand on Kara's shoulder to steady himself. Kalen noticed how he swayed on his feet. At times, he was having difficulty standing.
"No, they haven't been following us. The skies have been empty."
Richard gestured to the dead birds all around him. "These races weren't following us. They were waiting for us. They knew we were coming here. They lay in wait." That was a chilling thought, if it was true. Kalen straightened, holding the waxed paper in one hand, a finger of her other hand loaded with salve, waiting.
"How could they possibly know where we were going?"
"That's what I'd like to know," Richard said.
Nicholas glided back into his body, his mouth still opened wide in a yawn that was not a yawn. He stretched his neck to one side and then the other. He smiled with his delight in the game. It had been dazzling. It had been delicious. His widening grin bared his teeth. Nicholas staggered to his feet, wavering unsteadily for a moment. It reminded him of the way Richard Rawl swayed on his feet, dizzy with the effects of a poison that was inexorably doing its deadly work. Poor Richard Rawl needed the last dose of the antidote. Nicholas opened his mouth again in a yawn that was not a yawn, twisting his head, eager to be away, eager to learn more.
He would return soon enough. He would watch them as they worried, as they struggled in vain to understand what was happening, watch them as they approached. They would reach him in mere hours. The fun was truly about to begin. Nicholas wound his way across the room, stepping between the bodies sprawled everywhere. They had all died suddenly when the races were killed. Here and there, the dead were stacked in piles atop one another, the way the races in those dark woods had been heaped around Richard Rawl. Such violent deaths. Those spirits had been horrified as they were slaughtered. But there was nothing they could do to stop it. Nicholas had controlled their souls, their fate. Now they were beyond his control. Now they belonged to the keeper of the dead. Nicholas ran his fingernails back through his hair, shivering with delight as he felt the slick oils glide through his fingers and against his palm. He had to drag three bodies aside before he could get at the door. He threw the heavy latch over and opened the thick door. Najari! The man stood not far away, leaning against the wall, waiting. His muscular form straightened. What is it? Nicholas opened his arm back in graceful indication. His fingers tipped with black nails stretching wide. There is a mess in here that needs to be cleaned up. Get some men and have these bodies taken away. Najari stepped to the door and stretched his neck to peer into the room.
The whole crowd we brought in?
Yes, Nicholas snapped. I needed them all. And some more I had the soldiers fetch for me. I'm done with them now. Get rid of them. When the races had attacked, each had been driven by the soul of one of these ungifted people. And each of those souls had been driven by Nicholas. It had been a stupendous achievement. The simultaneous command of so many, with such precision and coordination. When the races had been killed, though, so too died the bodies back in the room with Nicholas. He supposed that one day he really should learn how to call back such spirits when their host died. It would save him from having to get new ones each time. But people were plentiful. Besides, if he were to find a way to call them back, then he would have to mind the people once their spirits returned, after they had learned his use of them. Still, it was annoying when Richard Rawl killed those Nicholas used to help him watch.
How much longer? Najari asked.
Nicholas smiled, knowing what the man was curious about.
Soon, very soon. You must get these people out of here before they arrive. Then keep our men out of the way. Let them do as they will.
Najari flashed a cunning smile.
As you wish, Nicholas.
Nicholas lifted an eyebrow.
Emperor Nicholas.
Najari chuckled as he started away to get his men.
Emperor Nicholas.
You know, Najari, I've been thinking.
Najari turned back.
About what?
About Chigang. We've worked so hard. What reason is there for me to bow to him? A legion of my silent army could swoop in upon him, and that would be that. I wouldn't even need an army. He could mount his horse one day, and I could be there in the beast, waiting to throw him and trample him to death.
Najari rubbed his stubble.
True enough.
Of what use is Jigang, really? I could just as easily rule the Imperial Order. In fact, I would be better suited to it.
Najari cocked his head.
Then what of the plans we've already laid?
Nicholas shrugged.
Why change them? But why should I give the Mother Confessor to Jigang? And why let him have the world? Perhaps I will keep her for my own amusement and have the world as well.
Chapter 56. Richard pressed his back up against the clabbered wall. He had to pause a moment, waiting for the world to stop spinning. He was so cold he felt numb. As dark as it was, he was having difficulty seeing. But it was more than the darkness. He knew that his sight was beginning to fail him. At night it was worse. He had always been able to see better at night than most other people. Now he was no better able to see at night than Kalin. That wasn't a big difference, but he knew it was meaningful.
The third state of the poison had begun. Fortunately, they were close to having the final dose.
"This is the alleyway here,"
Owen whispered. Richard looked up and down the street. He didn't see anything moving. The city of Houghton was asleep. He wished he could be, too. He was so exhausted and dizzy, he could hardly put one foot in front of the other. He had to take shallow breaths to keep from coughing. Coughing brought on the worst pain. At least he wasn't coughing up blood. Coughing now, though, could be fatal, so he swallowed, trying to stifle the urge. If they made any noise, it might alert the soldiers. When Owen moved into the alleyway, Richard, Kalin, Kara, Jensen, Tom, Anson, and a handful of their men followed in single file. There had been no lights burning in the windows facing the streets. As the small group moved through the alley close to the walls, Richard saw no windows. A few of the walls did have doors. At a narrow space between buildings, Owen turned in, following the brick path hardly wider than Richard's shoulders. Richard seized Owen by the arm. "Is this the only way in?"
"No. See there? The walkway goes through to the street in front, and there is another door inside that comes up on the other side of the building."
Satisfied that they had alternative escape routes, Richard gave Owen a nod. They took the dark stairwell down to a room at the bottom under the building. Tom struck flint to steel a number of times until he managed to light a candle. Once the candle was lit, Richard gazed around at the small, empty, windowless room. "What is this place?"
"The basement of a palace," Owen said.
Richard frowned at the man. "What are we doing here?" Owen hesitated and glanced at Kalin. Kalin saw the look. She pushed Richard down until he sat and leaned back against the wall. A footsore Betty squeezed between them and lay down beside Richard, pleased to have a rest. Jensen squatted close on the other side of Betty. Kara closed him in from the other side. Kalin knelt in front of him and then sat back on her heels. "Richard, I asked Owen to bring us here to a place where we would be safe. We can't all go into that building to get the antidote."
"I suppose not. That's a good idea. Owen and I will go. The rest of you stay here, where no one will spot you."
He started to get up, but Kalin pushed him back down.
"Richard, you have to wait here. You can't go. You're dizzy. You need to save your strength."
Richard gazed into her green eyes, eyes that always captivated him, always made everything else but her seem unimportant. He wished they could be alone somewhere peaceful, like the home he had built for her back in the mountains, where he had taken her to recover after she had been hurt. When she had lost their unborn child after being beaten nearly to death by those brutes. She was the most precious thing alive. She was everything. He wanted so much for her to be safe.
"I'm strong enough," he said. "I'll be fine."
"If you start coughing in that place where the soldiers are, then you'll be caught and never get out, much less recover the antidote. You and Owen would both be caught. There is no telling how many soldiers are in there. What will happen to us if you're caught? What would happen if..."
Her voice trailed off. She hooked a stray strand of hair behind an ear.
"Look, Richard, Owen went in there before. He can go in there again."
Richard saw desperation in her eyes. She was terrified of losing him. He hated that he was making her afraid.
"That's right, Lord Rawl," Owen assured him. "I will get the antidote and bring it to you."
"While we're waiting, you can get some rest," Kalin said. "Some sleep would do you more good than anything else until they bring back the antidote."
Richard couldn't debate how tired he was. He still didn't like the idea of not going himself.
"Tom could go with him," Kara suggested.
Richard looked up into Kara's blue eyes. He looked up into Kalin's eyes. He knew he had already lost this argument.
"How far is this place?" Richard asked Owen.
"A goodly distance. Here we are just at the fringe of the city. I wanted to take us to a place where we would be less likely to encounter soldiers. The antidote is at most an hour distant. I thought it best if we were not too far into the city if we had to get back out. But we are close enough so that you will not have long to wait for the antidote."
Richard nodded. "All right, we'll wait here for you and Tom."
Kalin paced in the small, damp basement as the others sat against the wall waiting in silence. She couldn't stand the tension. It felt too much like a death watch. They were so close that it made it seem impossibly far. They had waited so long that the small amount of time left seemed an eternity that would never end. Kalin told herself to calm down. Shortly, Richard would have the antidote. He would be better then. He would be cured of the poison then. But what if it didn't work? What if he had already waited so long that he was beyond any cure? No, the man who had made the poison and the antidote had told Owen that this last dose would cure Richard of the poison for good, because of the beliefs of these people. They would be certain that the poison was reversible. They would never have used it if they believed it would risk a life. But what if what they believed was wrong? Kalin rubbed her shoulders as she paced and admonished herself to stop inventing problems to worry about. They had enough real problems without letting her imagination get carried away. They would get the antidote, and then they would address the problem with Richard's gift. After that, they had to turn their attention to larger issues of Jigang and his army. When Kalin glanced over and saw that Richard had fallen sound asleep, she decided to go outside and watch for Owen and Tom. Kara, leaning against the wall beside Richard, guarding him while he slept, nodded when Kalin whispered to her, telling her where she was going. Jensen, seeing that Kalin was heading for the door, quietly followed her out. Betty had fallen asleep beside Richard, so Jensen left her there. The moonlit night had cooled. Kalin thought she should be sleepy, but she was wide awake. She followed the brick path out between the buildings toward the alley. "Owen will be back soon," Jensen said. "Try not to worry. It will be over soon." Kalin glanced over in the dark. "Even after he has the antidote, we still have his gift to worry about. Zed is too far. We're going to have to get to Nikki right away. She is the only one close enough that might know what to do to help him." "Do you think the trouble with his gift is getting worse?" Kalin was haunted by the pain she so often saw in his eyes, but there was more to it. "When he used the sword the last two times, I could see that even the sword's magic had failed him. He's in more trouble with his gift than he will admit." Jensen chewed her lower lip as she watched Kalin pace. "Tonight, he will have the antidote," she finally said in soft assurance. "Soon, we can be on our way to Nikki." Kalin turned when she thought she heard a noise in the distance. It had sounded like the crunch of a footstep. Two dark figures appeared off at the end of the alleyway. By the way one of them towered over the other, Kalin was pretty sure that it was Tom and Owen. She wanted to run to meet them, but she knew how deadly tricks could be, so she drew Jensen back with her around the corner of the building, into the darkest part of the shadows. This was no time to get careless. When the two men reached the narrow walkway and started to turn in, Kalin stepped out in front of them, prepared to unleash her power if necessary.
"Mother Confessor, it's me, Tom and Owen," Tom whispered.
Jensen let out a breath.
"Are we ever glad to see you back?"
Owen looked both ways down the alley. When he turned to check, Kalin saw moonlight reflect off tears running down his face.
"Mother Confessor, we have trouble," Tom said.
Owen spread his hands.
"Mother Confessor, I...
Kalin grabbed his shirt in both fists.
"What's wrong? The antidote was there, wasn't it? You have it, don't you?"
"No."
Owen choked back his tears and pulled out a folded piece of paper.
"Instead of the bottle of antidote, I found this in its hiding place."
Kalin snatched it out of his hands. With trembling fingers, she unfolded the paper. She turned as she held it close so she could read it in the light of the moon. "I have the antidote. I also hold by a thread the lives of the people of Bandakar. I can end all their lives as easily as I can end the life of Richard Rawl. I will give over the antidote and the lives of all the people in the Empire in exchange for the Mother Confessor. Bring the Mother Confessor to the bridge over the river 1 mile to the east of where you are. In 1 hour, if I do not have the Mother Confessor, I will pour the antidote in the river
and then I will see to it that all the people of the city die. Signed, Emperor Nicholas. Kaelin, her heart racing out of control, started east. Tom grabbed her arm and held her back.
Mother Confessor, I know what it says.
Kaelin's hands wouldn't stop shaking.
Then you know why I have no choice.
Jensen put herself in front of Kaelin to stop her from starting out once again.
What does the letter say?
Nicholas wants me in exchange for the antidote. Jensen put her hands against Kaelin's shoulders to stop her.
What?
That's what the letter says. Nicholas wants me in exchange for the lives of everyone else in this empire and the antidote to save Richard's life.
The lives of everyone else? But how could he carry out such a threat?
Nicholas is a wizard. There are any number of deadly things available to such a man. If nothing else, he could use wizard's fire and incinerate the entire city.
But his magic won't harm the people here. They're pristinely ungifted, the same as me.
If he uses wizard's fire to set a building ablaze like we did to those soldiers sleeping back in Owenstown, it won't matter to the people inside how the fire started. Once the buildings catch fire, then it's just regular fire. Fire that will kill anyone. If not that, Nicholas has soldiers here. He could immediately start executing people. He could have thousands beheaded in hardly any time at all. I can't even imagine what else he could do. But he put this letter where the antidote was hidden, so I know he's not bluffing. Kaelin stepped around Jensen and started out again. She couldn't make herself stop trembling. She tried to slow her racing heart, but that didn't work either. Richard had to have the antidote. That was what mattered. She focused her attention ahead as she marched swiftly up the dark street. Tom paced along beside her, opposite Jensen.
Mother Confessor, wait! We have to think this out. I already have. We can take a force of men to the meeting place. Take the antidote by force.
Kaelin kept going. From a wizard? I don't think so. Besides, if Nicholas were to see such a force coming, he would probably pour the antidote in the river. Then what?
We have to do as he demands. We have to get our hands on the antidote, get it safely away from them.
What makes you think that after Nicholas has you, he won't then pour it in the river? Tom asked.
We'll have to make the exchange in a way that best ensures we get the antidote. We aren't going to rely on his goodwill and honesty. Owen and Jensen are pristinely ungifted. They won't be harmed by his magic. They can help make sure we get the antidote in the exchange.
Jensen pulled her hair away from her face as she leaned close.
Kaelin, you can't do this. You can't, please. Richard will go crazy. We all will. Please, for his sake, don't do this.
At least he will be alive to go crazy. Tears streamed down Jensen's face.
But this is suicide.
Kaelin watched the buildings, the street, making sure there were no troops to hem them in. Let's hope Nicholas thinks so, too.
Mother Confessor, Owen pleaded, you can't do this. This is what Lord Rawl has shown us is wrong. You can't bargain with a man like Nicholas. You can't try to appease evil.
I have no intention of appeasing Nicholas. Jensen wiped tears from her cheek.
What do you mean?
Kaelin stiffened her resolve. What is our best chance of getting rid of the Imperial Order in this city, and all of Bandekar? Eliminating Nicholas. How better to get close to him than to make him think he has won? Jensen blinked in surprise.
You intend to touch him with your power?
That's what you're thinking, isn't it? You think you will have a chance to touch him with your confessor power.
If I get him in my sight, he's dead.
Richard would never agree to this, Jensen said.
I'm not asking him. This is my decision.
Tom stepped in front of her, blocking the way.
Mother Confessor, I'm sworn to protect the Lord Rawl, and I understand risking your life to protect him, but this is different. You may be acting to try to save his life, but at what cost? We would lose too much. You can't do this.
Owen moved around in front of her, too.
I agree. Lord Rawl will be more than crazy if you exchange yourself for the antidote.
Jensen nodded her agreement.
He will kill us all. He will take off our heads for allowing you to do this.
Kaelin smiled at their tense expressions. She put a hand to the side of Jensen's face.
Remember back just after we'd met you, and I told you there are times when there was no choice but to act?
Jensen nodded,
her tears returning. "This is one of those times. Richard is getting sicker by the day. He's dying. If he doesn't get the antidote, he has no chance and will soon be dead. That's the truth of the way things are. How can we let this chance slip away from us? There are no more opportunities after this. Our chances to save him will forever be lost. It will be the end. I don't want to live without him. I don't want the rest of our people to live without him. If I do this, then Richard will live. If Richard lives, then there will be a chance for me too. I can touch Nicholas with my power, or Richard and the rest of you can think of something to do to save me. But if Richard dies, then our chances end."
"But Mother Confessor," Jensen sobbed, "if you do this, then we'll lose you."
Kaelin looked to each face, her anger rising. "If any of you have a better idea, then put words to it. Otherwise, you are risking me losing the only chance left." No one had anything to say. Kaelin was the only one with a realistic plan of action. The rest of them had only wishes. Wishing would not save Richard. Kaelin started out once again, hurrying her pace to get there in time. Chapter 57. Kaelin paused in the quiet darkness not far from the bridge. She could just make out what appeared to be a burly man standing on the other side. He was all alone. She couldn't see his face or tell what he looked like. She scanned the far bank of the river along with the trees and buildings she could make out in the moonlight, looking for soldiers or anyone else. Jensen clutched her arm.
"Kaelin, please."
Her voice was choked with tears. Kaelin felt oddly calm. There were no options for her to weigh, so she suffered no gnawing indecision. There was only one choice. Richard lived, or he died. It was as simple as that. The choice was clear. Her mind was made up, and with that came clarity and determination. She could now focus on what she was to do. The river through the city was larger than Kaelin had expected. The steep banks to each side in this area, anyway, were a few dozen feet high and lined with stone blocks. The bridge itself, wide enough for wagons to pass one another, had two arches to make the span and side rails with simple stone caps. The waters below were dark and swift. It was not a river she would want to have to try to swim. Kaelin approached as far as the foot of the bridge and stopped. The man on the other side watched her.
"Do you have the antidote?" she called over to him.
He lifted what looked like a little bottle high above his head. He lowered the arm and pointed to the bridge. He wanted her to come across.
"Mother Confessor," Owen pleaded, "won't you reconsider?"
She gazed into his wet eyes.
"Reconsider what?"
"If I will have Richard live rather than let him succumb to the poison? If I will try to kill Nicholas in order to make it possible to defeat them and for your people to have a better chance to free themselves? How would I ever live with myself if Richard died without the antidote and I knew there was something I could have done that would have saved him and also have given me a chance to get close enough to Nicholas to eliminate him? I couldn't live with myself if I failed to do this. We are fighting this war to stop people like this. People who bring death upon us. People who want us dead because they cannot stand that we live our lives as we wish. That we are successful and happy. These people hate life. They worship death. They demand that we do the same and join them in their misery. As Mother Confessor, I decreed vengeance without mercy against the Imperial Order. Changing from our course is suicide. I will not reconsider."
"What would you have us tell Lord Rawl?" Tom asked.
She smiled. "That I love him. But he knows that." Kaelin unbuckled her sword belt and handed it to Jensen.
"Owen, come with me."
Kaelin started out, but Jensen threw her arms around her and hugged her fiercely.
"Don't worry," she whispered. "We'll get the antidote to Richard, and then we'll come back for you."
Kaelin hugged Jensen briefly, whispered her thanks, and then started onto the bridge. Owen walked at her side, saying nothing.
The man on the far side watched, but stayed where he was. In the center of the bridge, Kalin stopped. "Bring the bottle," she called across.
"Come over here and you can have it."
"If you want me, you will come to the center of the bridge and give the bottle to this man to take back as Nicholas offered." The man stood for a time, as if considering. He looked like a soldier, rather than the description of Nicholas that Owen had given her. Finally, he started onto the arch of the bridge. Owen whispered that it looked like the commander he had seen with Nicholas. Kalin waited, watching the man walk through the moonlight. He wore a knife at one side, and a sword at his other hip. When he had almost reached her, he came to a halt and waited. Kalin held her hand out. "The note said we were to trade me for what Nicholas has." The man, his crooked nose flattened to the side, smiled.
"So we were."
"I am the Mother Confessor. Either give me the bottle, or you die here now." He pulled the square-sided bottle from his pocket and placed it in her hand. Kalin saw that it was full of clear liquid. She pulled the cork and smelled it. It had the slight aroma of cinnamon, as had the other bottles of the antidote. "He goes back with this," Kalin said to the grim-looking man as she handed Owen the bottle.
"And you come with me,"
the man said as he grabbed her wrist,
"or we all die on this bridge. He may go as agreed, but if you try to run, you will die."
Kalin glanced to Owen.
"Go," she growled.
Owen looked over at the man with black hair, then back to her. He looked like he had a lot to say, but he nodded, and then ran back over the bridge to where Tom and Jensen stood waiting, watching. When Owen reached the other two, the man said,
"Let's go, unless you'd like to die here."
Kalin yanked her arm back. When he turned and started out, she followed behind him as they crossed the rest of the way over the bridge. She scanned the shadows among the trees on the far side of the river, the thousand hiding places among buildings beyond, the streets in the distance. She didn't see anyone, but that didn't really make her feel any better. Nicholas was there somewhere, hiding in the darkness, waiting to have her. Suddenly, the night lit up from behind. Kalin spun and saw the bridge enveloped in a boiling ball of flame. The fire turned black as it billowed up. Stones sailed into the air above the inferno. As the luminous cloud rose, she could see the bridge beneath the roaring fireball crumpling. The arches caved in on themselves, and the entire structure began the long drop into the river. With icy dread, Kalin wondered if there were any more bridges across the river. How was help going to get to her? How would she get back to Richard if she succeeded? On the far side, Kalin could see Tom, Jensen, and Owen running back up the road toward where Richard slept. They were not about to waste time watching a bridge being destroyed. At the thought of Richard, Kalin almost let out a sob. The man unexpectedly shoved her.
"Move!"
She glared at him, at his self-satisfied smile, at the smug confidence she saw in his eyes. As she walked ahead of this man, and he occasionally shoved her, Kalin's temper was on a low boil. She had the urge to use her power and take the despicable brute, but she had to concentrate on the task at hand, Nicholas. Walking up the street leading away from the river, she was just able to make out soldiers hanging back in the shadows on the dark side streets, blocking every escape route. It didn't matter. At the moment, she wasn't interested in escape, but in her objective. The man behind her, as arrogantly as he was behaving, was also wary and treated her with cautious contempt. The farther she walked into the city on the far side of the river, the closer the clusters of small buildings were packed together. Side streets of narrow, twisting warrens ran off among the ramshackle structures. What trees there were grew crowded in close to the street. Their branches hung out over her like arms raised to snatch her in their claws. Kalin tried not to think about how deep she was getting into enemy territory and how many men were surrounding her. The last time she had been surrounded and trapped by such savage men, she had been beaten nearly to death and had come perilously close to dying. Her unborn child had died. Her child. Richard's child. She had also lost a kind of innocence that day, a simplistic sense of her invincibility. In its place had come the understanding of how frail life was, how frail her own life was, and how easily it could be lost. She knew how much it had hurt Richard to fear he might lose her. She remembered the terrible agony in his eyes every time he had looked at her. It was completely different from the pain she saw in his eyes from his gift. It had been a helpless suffering for her. She hated the thought of that pain returning to haunt him. From the shadows to the right side, a man stepped out from behind a building. He wore black robes, covered in layers of what looked like strips of cloth, almost as if he were covered in black feathers. They lifted in the breeze created by his stride, lending him an unsettling, floating fluidity as he moved. His hair was slicked back with oils that glistened in the moonlight. Close-set, small black eyes rimmed in red peered out at her from an altogether unwholesome face. He held his wrists to his chest, as if he were holding back claws tipped with black fingernails. Kaylin needed no introduction to know that this was Nicholas the Slide. She had taken confessions from men who appeared to be no more than polite young men, working fathers or kindly grandfathers, but in truth were men who had carried out acts of ruthless cruelty. To look at them behind their bench where they made shoes, or behind a counter where they sold bread, or in a field tending their animals, it would be difficult to believe them capable of their vile crimes. But looking at Nicholas, Kaylin saw such utter corruption that it tainted everything about the man, right down to the indecent squint of his eyes.
"The prize of prizes," Nicholas hissed.
He reached out, making a fist.
"And I have her."
Kaylin hardly heard him. She was already lost to the commitment of wielding her power. This was the man who held the lives of innocent people hostage. This was the man who brought suffering and death in his shadow. This was the man who would kill her and Richard if given the chance. She snatched his outstretched wrist, capped with his fist. He appeared no more than a statue before her. The night, sprinkled with a vault of stars, seemed cold and distant. Beneath her grip of him, Kaylin could feel Nicholas tense, as if to draw back his arm. But it was too late. He had no chance. He was hers. Time was hers. The men all around, who had begun rushing in, were far too distant to matter. They could never reach her in time to save Nicholas. Not even the man who had brought her from the bridge, who now stood not more than a few paces away, was close enough to matter. Time was hers. Nicholas was hers. She gave no thought to what those men would do to her. Right then, it didn't matter. Right then, nothing but her ability to do what needed doing mattered. This man had to be eliminated. This was the enemy. This was the man who had invaded a land to torture, rape, and murder innocent people in the name of the Imperial Order. This was a man who had been mutated by magic into a monster designed to destroy them. This man was a tool of conquest, a being of evil. This was the man who held Richard's life in the balance. The power within raged to be released. All her emotions evaporated before the heat of that power. She no longer felt fear, hate, anger, horror. The emotions behind her reasons were now gone. In the all-consuming race of time suspended before the violent rush of her power, she felt only a resolute determination. Her power had become an instrument of pure reason. All her barriers fell before it. In an infinitesimal spark of time, as she watched the beady eyes staring at her, her power became all. As she had done countless times before, Kaylin released her restraint on it and released herself into the flux of violence focused to a singular purpose. Where she should have felt the exquisite release of merciless force, she felt instead a terrifying emptiness. Where there should have been the fierce twisting of her power through this man's mind, there was nothing. Kaylin's eyes went wide as she gasped, as she felt hot pain knife through her, as she felt the thrust of something foreign and terrible beyond anything she could have imagined. Hot agony lanced through her consciousness all the way into her very soul. It felt as if her insides were being ripped apart. She tried to scream, but couldn't. The night went blacker still. Kaylin heard laughter echoing through her soul. Chapter 58. Richard's eyes popped open. He felt suddenly, completely, horrifyingly wide awake. The hair at the back of his neck lifted. It felt like all his hair wanted to stand on end. His heart raced nearly out of control. He shot to his feet. Kara, right beside him, caught his arm, surprised to see him suddenly stand up and looking like she feared he might fall, as she frowned in concern. "Lord Rawl, what's the matter? Are you all right?" The room was silent. Startled faces all around stared up at him.
"Get out!" he yelled. "Get your things, everyone, out now!"
Richard snatched up his pack. He didn't see Kaylin, but saw her pack and grabbed it as well. He wondered if he might still be dreaming, but he never remembered his dreams. He wondered if the feeling might be some lingering dread from a dream. No, it was real. At first confused and indecisive by Richard's sudden commands, when the men saw him urgently picking up his gear, everyone scooped up their things and scrambled to their feet. Men everywhere were snatching anything they saw lying about, no matter whose it was.
"Move!"
Richard yelled as he pushed hesitant men toward the door.
"Go! Move! Move! Move!"
It felt as if something brushed against him, a sliding caress of his flesh, something warm and wicked. Goosebumps tingled up his arms.
"Hurry!"
Men scrambled wildly up the dark stairs ahead of him. Betty, caught up in the mood of panicked escape, shot between his legs and ran up the steps. Kara was close behind him. The hair at the nape of his neck prickled as if lightning was about to strike. Richard scanned the dark, empty room.
"Where's Kaylin and Jensen?"
"They went outside before," Kara said.
"Good, let's go."
Just as Richard reached the top of the stairs, a fiery blast from back in the room knocked him sprawling. Kara fell on his legs. The stairwell lit in a flash of yellow and orange light as the entire basement filled with flames. Gouts of fire rolled up the stairwell. Richard seized Kara's arm and dove with her through the open doorway. As they burst out into the night, the building behind them erupted in a thunderous roar of flames. Parts of the building broke apart, lifting in the billowing blaze. Richard and Kara ducked as flaming boards fell all around them, bouncing and flipping across the ground lit by the glow. Finally, away from the burning building, Richard made a quick appraisal of the alley, looking to see if there were any soldiers about to set upon them. Not seeing anyone he didn't recognize, he started the men moving down the alley to put some distance between them and the burning building.
"We have to get away from here," Richard told Anson. "Nicholas knew we were here. The fire will draw attention and troops. We haven't much time."
Looking around, he still didn't see Kaylin anywhere. His concern rising, he spotted Jensen, Tom, and Owen running up the alley toward him. By the looks on their faces, he immediately knew that something was wrong. Richard seized Jensen's arm as she ran up close.
"Where's Kaylin?"
Jensen gulped air.
"Richard, she...
Jensen burst into tears. Owen waved a square-sided bottle and a piece of paper as he, too, wept uncontrollably. Richard looked at Tom, expecting an answer, and fast,
"What's going on?"
"Nicholas found the antidote. He offered it in trade for the Mother Confessor. We tried to stop her, Lord Rawl. I swear we did. She wouldn't listen to any of us. She insisted that she was going to get the antidote and then stop Nicholas. After you have the antidote, if she fails to stop Nicholas in return, she wants you to come for her." The leaping flames lit the grim faces around him.
"Once her mind is made up," Tom added, "there is no talking her out of it. She has a way of making you do as she says."
Richard knew the truth of that. Amid the roar and crackle of the fire, the building groaned and popped. The roof began to fall in, sending showers of sparks skyward. Owen urgently handed the square-sided bottle to Richard.
Lord Rawl, she did it to get the antidote. She wanted you to have it so you could be well. She said that comes first, before it is too late.
Richard pulled the cork on the bottle. It had the slight aroma of cinnamon. He took the first swallow, expecting a thick, sweet, spicy taste. It didn't taste that way at all. He looked at Jensen and Owen's faces.
This is water.
Jensen's eyes went wide.
What?
Water. Water with a little cinnamon in it.
Richard poured it on the ground.
It's not the antidote. She traded herself to Nicholas for nothing.
Jensen, Owen, and Tom stood in mute shock. Richard felt a kind of detached calm. It was over. It was the end of everything. He now had a limited amount of time to do what had to be done, and then everything was at an end for him.
Let me see this note, he said to Owen.
Owen handed it over. Richard had no trouble reading by the light coming from the fire. As Kara, Tom, Jensen, and Owen watched, he read it over three times. Finally, his arm lowered. Kara snatched the note away and read it for herself. Richard gazed up the alleyway at the burning building, trying to figure it out. How did Nicholas know that someone was coming for the antidote? He said we had an hour. How did he know we were here, this close, and coming for it, in order to write in the note that he gave us an hour?
Maybe he didn't, Kara said. Maybe he wrote the note days ago. Maybe he just wrote that to make us rush without thinking.
Maybe. Richard gestured behind him. But how did he know we were here?
Magic?
Jensen offered. Richard didn't like the idea that Nicholas apparently knew so much and was always one step ahead of them. How did you know that Nicholas was about to set this place ablaze? Kara asked him.
I woke suddenly, Richard said. My headache was gone, and I just knew we had to get out at once.
So your gift worked?
I guess so. It does that. It works sometimes to warn me.
He wished he could somehow make it more dependable. At least this time it had been, or they would all be dead. Tom peered out into the night.
So, you think Nicholas is close?
That he knew where we were and set the place afire?
No. I think he wants us to believe he's close. He's a wizard. He could have sent wizard's fire from a great distance. I'm no expert on magic. He might have used some other means to set the fire from a distance.
Richard turned to Owen. Take me to this building where you hid the antidote, where Nicholas was when you first saw him. Without hesitation, Owen started out. The rest of the small group followed after him.
Do you think she will be there?
Jensen asked. There's only one way to find out.
By the time they reached the river, they were out of breath. Richard was furious to find the bridge gone with stone blocks from it scattered on the banks far below.
The rest of it had apparently vanished beneath the dark water. Owen and some of the other men said that there was another bridge farther to the north, so they took off in that direction, following the road that twisted along beside the river. Before they reached the bridge, a knot of soldiers rushed out from a side street. The men ran out with weapons raised and yelling battle cries. The night rang with the distinctive sound of Richard's sword being drawn. While the blade was free, its magic was not. With the heart-pounding threat, it didn't matter. Richard had anger to spare and met the enemy with a cry of his own. The first man lunged. Richard's strike was so violent, it cleaved the burly man down through the leather armor over his shoulder to his opposite hip. As Richard spun without pause to a soldier coming at him from behind, he brought the sword around with such speed that the man was beheaded before he had cocked his sword arm. Richard drew his elbow back, smashing the face of a man rushing in to stab him from behind. A quick thrust took down another man before Richard could turn to finish the man behind, who had dropped to his knees, covering his bleeding face. A moonlit flash of Richard's sword brought measured death. Tom slashed through the men at the same time as Kara's Ajeel took others down. The cries of surprised pain shattered the quiet of the night. All the while, Richard swept through the enemy like a wind-borne shadow.
In mere moments, the night was again silent. Richard, Tom, and Kara had eliminated the enemy squad before any of their men could react to the threat that had come out of the darkness. Scarcely had they caught their breath when Richard was already charging onward to the bridge. When they reached it, two slouching Imperial Order soldiers stood guard, pikes standing upright. The guards seemed to be surprised that people would be running toward them at night, probably because the people of Bandekar had never before dared to cause them any trouble. The two guards stood watching Richard come until he pulled his sword from behind and took them down with a rapid thrust to the first man and a powerful sweeping slice that cut the second in two, along with the pike standing at his side. The small company raced unopposed across the bridge and into the darkness among the crowded buildings. Owen directed Richard at every turn as they rushed onward toward the place where Owen had hidden the antidote, and where he had recovered, instead of the antidote, the note demanding Kaelin in exchange for Richard's life, in exchange for the lives of an empire naked to the dark talons of Nicholas the Slide. In the somber heart of the city, made up of small, squat, mostly single-story buildings, Owen pulled Richard to a stop.
"Lord Rawl, down here at the corner we turn to the right. A short distance beyond is a square where people often gather. At the far end of the square will be a building taller than those around it. That is the place. Down a small street to the side of it, there will be an alleyway that runs behind the building. That is the way I got in before."
Richard nodded. "Let's go." Without waiting to see if the tired men were with him, he started out, keeping in close to the buildings, to the shadows cast by the moon. Richard moved around the building at the corner. Hung over a small front window was a carved sign displaying loaves of bread. It was still too early for the baker to be at work. Richard looked up and froze. There before him was the square with trees and benches. The building across the open square was in ruin. Only smoldering timbers remained. A small crowd had gathered around, watching what had hours ago obviously been a large fire.
"Dear spirits!" Jensen whispered in horror.
She covered her mouth, fearing to speak aloud the worry on everyone's mind.
"She wouldn't be in there," Richard said in answer to the unspoken fear. "Nicholas wouldn't take her back here just to kill her."
"Then why do this?" Anson asked. "Why burn the place down?" Richard watched the wisps of smoke slowly curling up into the cool night air at his hopes disappearing. "To send me a message that he has her and I'll not find her."
"Lord Rawl," Kara said under her breath, "I think we had better get out of here."
From the darkness around the building that had burned down, Richard could just start to make out the sight of soldiers by the hundreds, no doubt waiting to catch them.
"I feared as much," Owen said. "That's why I brought us in by such a circuitous route. See that road over there, where all the soldiers are? That's the road coming from the bridge we crossed."
"How do they always know where we are or where we will be?"
Jensen whispered in frustration.
"And when?"
Kara grabbed Richard's shirt and started pulling him back. "There are too many. We don't know how many more are around us. We need to get out of here." Richard was loath to admit it, but she was right.
"We have men waiting for us," Tom reminded him, "and a lot more coming."
Richard's mind raced. Where was she? Finally, he nodded. The instant he did, Kara took him by his arm and they dashed off into the darkness. Chapter 59. Under the sweep of stars, Richard willed himself to stand up straight and tall before all the men gathered beneath the spreading branches of the oak trees at the forest's edge. A few candles burned among the gathering, so they could all see. By the time they charged into the city of Northwick to make their attack, it would just be light. Richard wanted nothing more than to get into the city and find Kaelin, but he had to use everything he had at hand to help, or he might waste the chance. He had to do this first. Most of these men had never really fought before. Owen and Anson's men from the town of Witherton had been there at the first attack on the sleeping houses and had taken part in the skirmishes there. The rest of the men were from Northwick, where Richard had gone to see the Wise One. They had been in on the clashes with the soldiers who weren't poisoned. There had not been a great many enemy soldiers to fight, but the men had done what had to be done. If anything, those minor but bloody encounters had served only to make the men more determined, showing them that they could win freedom themselves, that they were in control of their own destiny. This, though, was different. This was going to be a battle on a scale they had not experienced. Worse, it was in a city that had, for the most part, willingly joined with the order's cause. The populace was not likely to offer much help. Had he more time, Richard might have come up with a better plan that would have chipped away at the enemy's numbers first, but there was no time. It had to be now.